on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial President, Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Tuesday, May 19th, 2015 edition of InvestTalk. We're here on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and people subscribe to our podcast everywhere around the world. And thanks to our subscribers on that podcasting, we're just a tad over 4 million downloads now. Pretty happy about that. We appreciate your interest, and we're pleased that you take the time to listen. I thank you very much. And one of the way registered investment advisors like KPP Financial, me, earn their keep is by following the constant changes of the market and the economy. It's a never-ending story. A good example is the Fed's bargain basement interest rates. How long do you think that's going to stay there? Those interest rates, those very low interest rates, had a far-reaching impact on our economy, on retirement accounts, the way older people invest. But even though it might seem like it's normal, these very low interest rates, they are not normal and they're not sustainable. I'm not saying rates will skyrocket. They won't. They've been this low and stayed this low for some time. And they probably will stay fairly low. But eventually, rates are going to rise. And at some point when they do, fixed income securities will decrease in value as rates rise. I just don't think the rates are going to rise anytime soon. I think the Fed's going to postpone. You know, there's a lot of speculation they're going to raise rates in June. That's not happening, I don't think. Now the bet is more in September. I'm not believing that's going to happen either. I'm not so sure that's going to happen. They will raise the rate. Remember, we're only talking about the overnight rate to banks, but all the other rates that are controlled out there by consumers and banks and mortgage rates, all those other rates follow suit. Whatever the Fed does on the overnight rate meaning the amount they charge banks to borrow money from the Federal Reserve, then the banks go out and lend that money. So the higher the cost, the more they pass that cost along. They raise the rates. But does it mean you should stay away from fixed income? Not necessarily. I don't believe so. Nope. I kind of like fixed income. I just don't necessarily like bond funds. I like bonds themselves as part of a diversified portfolio if you want to be more conservative. Fixed income offers a lot of value points that equities do not. One major characteristic is that it's less risky. If a company falls into bankruptcy, bondholders are paid first before equity shareholders. And so that's good, but bonds usually get paid, and if you buy high-quality bonds, your probability of default is very, very small. And it offers stable income and stable values to your... It stabilizes the value in your stock portfolio if you have bonds in there. So I'm not against bonds. People tell me that I say I am. I am not. I'm against bond funds, mutual funds, ETF bond funds. Not saying you can never own them. There's certain ones that I do like, but in general, when interest rates are rising or going to rise, I don't want to be in a bond fund. I'd rather be in a bond, hold the bond to maturity, and it will go back to par, and I'll get my money back. But that's a whole nother discussion. If your portfolio objectives require fixed income securities, I suggest a ladder. Diversify your bond portfolio. Purchases, don't just buy one, ladder them, buy a number of them, ladder them out. I think our current bond holdings in our balanced income portfolio, I think we're out 4 or 5 years. And you want to hold maybe 10 bonds. The hardest part about buying bonds for individuals is you're getting good pricing because you don't buy enough of them to get a good price, and you're going to get a very bad price from whoever's selling you the bond. If you'd like to talk more about this, you can call and ask, and we're open to any money questions. Our number is 888-99-CHART. So that number is on all the time. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time, so if you call it now, right now, we can have a conversation. It's time for our Q&A. Let's take the first question from our 24-hour listener line.
Hi, Steve. I currently have some money in a couple of mutual funds, which really aren't doing so much. I haven't been paying attention to them. And then I have about 3 to 6 months living expenses in a money market account. Now, I would like to start investing, so I would have about maybe $2,000 to just go into the stock market, and I'd like to get your advice on that, on how to pick the right stocks to invest. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, I would not necessarily start with stocks. I would probably start with ETFs and probably some indexing ETFs. You know, S&P 500, the NASDAQ, Russell 2000, the Dow. You know, a dollar cost average in over the summer during the, you know, any kind of weakness in the market, you want to be a buyer. So don't dump it all at one time necessarily, not at this time in the market anyways. But that's how I do it. If you're going to start buying stocks, you should start with your core holdings. And you need to have 10, 15, 20 stocks. Buying one or two is kind of high risk. So I start with ETFs until you get enough money, maybe, I don't know, $50,000 or so. Then you can switch to buying stocks. So you can get a proper diversification in stocks. That's what I suggest. It's emerging as an alternative to stocks, bonds, and mutual funds for IRA investors. Can real estate fit in your IRA? That's going to be one of our talking points today. Why money won't make you happy. Of course, I'm going to have a lot of people disagree with me, but there's reasons why it won't make you happy, and I'm going to give you some. Where have all the shoppers gone? Retail sales, we have not been good. So where have they gone? What's the problem? And did you see this morning, U.S. housing starts shot up 20% in April? So retail sales have been not very good, but housing looks like it's picking up. So what's the verdict here on the economy? Is it bad, good? And you know, you can see that dichotomy in the stock market. Is the stocks good, bad this year, up, down? They don't know. Now, I will say this. Today, the market, the Dow was up 14, the NASDAQ was down 8, and the S&P was down 1. Well, excuse me, that means the Dow made a new high. Yay. But the new high, it's been 6 months of going sideways, and there is absolutely no conviction on the upside here. No conviction on the downside either. There's no conviction, period. So you have a situation where no one knows where the market's going to go at this point. You've got a lot of people being very bearish, and this is the time of year that most people do get bearish. And then you have a lot of people reporting that because there's so many people bearish, that's actually bullish for the market because those people are already out. Waiting for the market to fall, and the market hasn't fallen. So that's kind of bullish because eventually those people come back in. When they come back in, they push stock prices up. Which is it? No one really knows. No one does. You know, if someone ever told you that they knew, that means they're lying because there's no such thing as a crystal ball. What you can do is you can buy good, solid stocks that pay dividends or have solid growth and not overpay for them. That's what you can do. But you can't know where the market direction is going to go. I can say long term it's going to go up. Okay? I can say that with lots of conviction. But long term, how long is long? Are you falling in love with a stock? Really? Are you? Let's say a company you invest in is doing well. You're happy that you own it. Okay? Are you in love with it? But you forgot the reason why you bought it in the first place. Because all it did was go up until you're not worried about it. I'm telling you, you got to keep your head clear. It's your money. It's your money, but you got to be careful. Join us. Bring your question to us, 888-99-CHART. Sandra and Milipitas is next. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's talk to Sandra and Milipitas. How you doing, Sandra?
I'm good, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
Before I talk about the stock, so if the PE is like in the 15s, is it a good time to buy it even though it's at 15?
Well, a PE ratio of 15 over the overall market is normal. That's a normal PE over the multi years. The S&P 500 PE ratio is about 15. So it's neither overvalued or undervalued when it's at 15. Then, Sandra, you go to the specific sector that the stock that you're looking at is in, and every sector has its own long-term average PE ratio. Did you know that?
I've heard about it.
Yeah.
Because I'm looking at Walmart.
Okay.
Ticker is WMT, and their PE is like something around 14 or 15.
Yeah, it's right now, at, if you're looking back, it's 16, and it's probably going to be 15, 16, because it's a they're going to make $5.13 next year. Okay, so based on a $76 stock, you can see that that's right around market average for their PE. Long, their five-year PE range is 11 to 18, so they don't usually sell, big blue-chip stocks don't usually sell at more than market average PEs. Well, so Walmart would fall into that category.
I see. So I'm looking, I want to buy some stock.
Okay.
For the long term.
Walmart's a great company.
I was wondering,
Walmart's a great company. We own that in our managed accounts, by the way. Just, I always like to admit that. They pay a 2.6% dividend. They had some hard times, but they're still the leader. You know, they are the leader. So I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. They had a bad day today. The earnings came out, and they missed earnings because of raising salaries and spending money on building out their internet shopping portal.
Is it a good time to, should I wait for a pattern?
Well, Walmart was almost 90 at the beginning of the year, and today it's 76. So that's down quite a bit. I think this is an opportunity for you to get into Walmart. My personal belief is that. If you want to own it, you want to buy it when it's not expensive. And I don't say it's cheap, but it's certainly not expensive at the price it is today. So I kind of like it in this area. If it's a long-term, Sandra, if it's a long-term hold, you're going to buy it for the long term, you want to buy it when no one else wants it. Right?
What about the options? Yes, that's very true. But I'm just kind of, I fear because of the options, you know how they expire, like coming soon?
Yeah.
I don't know if I should wait until that
options
happens.
It's not going to move the stock or price of Walmart hardly at all. The options expire every third Friday of every month. And if you look at Walmart, it kind of ignores the options expiration date. It doesn't really move it one way or another. It's too big. Walmart's too big. Thanks for the call, Sandra.
Great.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Thank you. Good luck. Walmart WMT is a symbol. And I didn't go into what they do, because if you don't know what they do, you're clueless. They're the world's largest retailer. So, and they constantly make money, but their growth rate is, low single digits, 1%, 2%, 3%. It has not grown more than 3% in over 2 years in any one quarter. And this most recent quarter is flat. Just reported, just today. No growth at all. Flat. Okay? Walmart. And as I mentioned, we own that in our managed accounts. We bought it not too long ago because we felt it was getting cheap enough to buy. And of course, now they came out with earnings today and they didn't like it. It was down to a couple bucks today. That's pretty painful. If you're already an InvestTalk Insider, then you know you can watch any of our wealth webinars whenever you're ready. So if you want to become an insider, you can sign up for free on InvestTalk.com.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. We're really close to hitting our 4 millionth InvestTalk download. Steve and Justin are so pleased that you find this podcast worthwhile. Why not tell a friend and help us hit that 4 million mark? And thanks again for subscribing.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Is real estate emerging, real estate for you and your IRA? Do you think you want to, as an alternative investment, use your IRA money to buy real estate? You can. You can do that. But there is a lot of caveats about that. You can do it. First of all, you got to set up a, instead of a traditional IRA, you got to set up a self-directed retirement account. A self-directed retirement account is a little bit different. You have to have, the IRS is scrutinizing these things when you start to buy real estate. There's rules and regulations you have to follow that are kind of unusual, kind of different. You just can't go out and buy real estate. It's not that simple. I wish it was that simple. It's just not. So you really have to get with someone, when I say get with someone, I mean an accountant or somebody who is very familiar with the rules and regulations to help you through this. And then you can go out and buy real estate. You can, you got to have arm's length transactions. You can't do anything with your brother or sister, any kind of relative or any even close relationship non-family member. You got to be really, really careful of how you do things. Because remember, the IRS is scrutinizing these things. But you can, and it's not only just real estate. You can buy other things. You can buy a business. You can do different things. The IRA law allows you to do that. But when you get away from normal type investments, stocks, bonds, ETFs, mutual funds, you get away from those. They scrutinize it very carefully, but you can do it. That's the point. The point is that you can do it if you're really much more comfortable of doing that. And you kind of have to jump in with both feet. You can't be a little bit there and a little bit here. You either are or are not going to be in the self-directed retirement account in real estate, or just go back to your stuff, regular investments in stocks, bonds, ETFs, mutual funds. Kind of have to either be in or not in. But that's, again, a personal thing for everybody. But I've had a lot of calls. Can I buy real estate? Well, I always say, you can do it. And you can, but you got to be really careful. We're here for you. Beginner experienced investors, always welcome. 888-99-CHART. If you're a podcast listener and you can't reach us during our live program, which is always 4 to 5 Pacific time, you can leave your question like Renee did in San Diego.
I'm actually calling to find out a little bit about IPE. I just want to know about the risk and rewards regarding that type of investment. Thank you.
IPE is it's the spiders, the TIPS, Treasury Inflation Protected, Exchange Rate Efficiency and Performance to the Barclays U.S. Government Inflation Linked Bond Index. So, a TIP, Treasury Inflation a bond works, okay, is that they pay a certain interest rate, like a money market, like a bond, like a regular bond. And that is extremely low because on top of that, they add in the inflation rate. And they reset it every 6 months. So if inflation goes up, you get higher and higher yields. Just stay ahead of inflation. That's the principle of a TIP. Treasury Inflation Protected Bond, okay, securities, TIPS, Treasury Inflation Protected Securities. So are they a good thing to be in? Well, first of all, the interest rate is really, really, really low, so they're not paying much there, and inflation is really, really, really low, so you're not getting hardly any return. Might be better than money market, CDs, maybe a one-year CD might be better than that, but it may not. It's not paying very much money because there's no inflation and interest rates are so very low. Now, let's say interest rates start to go up and you bought a 10-year TIP, a 10-year government TIP, a Treasury Inflation Protected Bond. Well, that problem with that is your base rate doesn't change. It only changes with inflation. So actually the net asset value might go down if interest rates start to go up and you bought an old 10-year bond, Treasury Inflation Protected Bond, and that paying 0.1% interest on the base rate, and now it's paying 0.5% interest. Well, yours is going to be worth less than the new one. It's just, you have risks involved. You got interest rate risks and you have inflation risk. If you believe interest rate, if you believe inflation is really going to take off or start to creep up and be consistently creeping up, and you want safety, these are where you go. Otherwise, they're not paying very much right now. And if you don't think inflation, I'll be honest, I don't think we're going to have much inflation, not for a while. We're not going to have much inflation. And interest rates are going to rise extremely slowly, extremely slowly. So the Fed is not going to want to strengthen the dollar. Well, that's a whole nother conversation. But just I don't know if you really want to be in these at this time. Tips, you really want to be in them when inflation starts to pick up. That's where you want to start to think about buying them. What's one investing tool that can bring you instant diversification? At half the cost of mutual funds, understanding exchange-traded funds, ETFs, coming up next in InvestTalk 101. We're going to talk about ETFs and try to give you a little lesson on them. I hope you stay with me, and you're listening to InvestTalk.
InvestTalk is all about above-average investing for the average investor. How do you prepare your retirement plan for a volatile market? Talk about it now, 888-99-CHART.
Have you, did you see the report out this morning that says housing starts for April were up 20.2%, much bigger than expected, at 1.14 million units annual rate, 1.14 million rates. And that is the fastest rate since late 2007. Okay, and now what was interesting is single family homes rose 16.7%. And you would say, wow, that's great, to 733,000. But, and that's the fastest rate since 2008, but building for at least five units or more, multifamily units, up 32%. Now, don't get excited at 1.1 million houses rates. That is still below before the crash, the big market crash, the big economic slump. For 20 years, the average up to that point, for 20 years, was 1.5 million units, and we're at 1.1 million units. So we're still not anywhere near what we were. We're not. But it certainly is picking up. And permits for new construction, and that's a leading economic indicator. You're looking forward, well, how many more units are they going to build going forward? So permits for new construction was up 10.1% in April to 1.14 million, just like we had the construction now. So single-family permits went up 3.7%, but for multifamily units, it went up 20%. Now, you got to remember, every 1 month, they also revised March's numbers up. So 1 month really doesn't tell the whole story, but it is a positive sign. So housing looks like it's going to be a continuing positive to our economy going forward for a number of years, in my personal opinion. Remember, coming out of the recession, housing did not recover. And we're still not the way we were, not even close for the 20-year average before the Great Recession we had. We're not even close to the 20. We need 300,000 or 400,000 more houses before we're even at average over those 20 years. Now, that's pretty interesting, huh? So we're still not there. No. 888-99-CHART. Why don't we go ahead and take another call? Let's talk to Joe Modesto. How you doing, Joe?
Hello, Steve. I'm doing great. I want to thank you for giving your time. You're very generous to teach financial illiterates like me. It's been my New Year's resolution to learn more about the stock market.
Good.
I couldn't spell stocks before the first of the year, and you've been a major factor.
Well, thank you.
And I want to thank you for your time. The question I have is on Verizon, and I've looked at their charts lately, and I've noticed they're in a descending triangle, and today they broke support. I like the stock because it pays good dividends, but there's some other things I don't like about it, like their debt, and today they broke support, and I'm not sure what to think about that.
Well, I think that, you know, just today, the support they broke wasn't enough to say, oh, okay, well, I got to worry about it. I think if this stock holds in this area, and you'll know that within the next week, this is probably a good place to buy it. Okay?
I own it. I bought it about a month ago.
Okay. We've owned Verizon for some time in our income account because they pay we bought it and we're paying 5. Now they're paying 4.4% dividend yield. There's not too many stocks that are extremely safe, growing a few percentage and paying that kind of dividend. So I think it's something you want to be as a core holding. And, it's going to come back down, but then it's going to go back up. I mean, the P.E. ratio is only 14, and, you know, they make more money every year, and they will make more money next year. It's just not a very fast grower, Joe. So are you worried about, do you want to get out because it broke support, or is that your concern?
I'm kind of concerned that it was going to go down a little bit more because now they've announced they're buying AOL, and there's been a lawsuit put in place because of that.
Yeah, and why are they buying AOL? For the advertisement dollars. That's what they're hoping to make. I wasn't too keen on the purchase myself. I think, you know, it's $4.4 billion to buy AOL. And, you know, of course, that's probably not a lot of money to a $202 billion company like Verizon. But long term, I think Verizon is just fine. You just kind of want to buy it if you get it cheap. I mean, if you could buy it at like $45, $44, $45, that would be great. But I don't, you know, that means that we have to have a recession to have that happen. So I'm going to hold on to it because I love that dividend. Joe?
Yeah, I like the dividend too. I think I should hold on to it too. Yeah. Thanks for your advice, Steve.
Thanks for the call, Joe. Appreciate it. Let's go to Sean in Redwood City. How you doing, Sean?
Hey, how are you, sir?
Good. Thanks for the call.
Hey, I had a couple of questions. I'm learning just like the next last gentleman about stocks, mutual funds. I'm trying to find out is, I have kind of two-part question. One is on which one's better, ETFs or mutual funds, and what do I look for? Do I look for something that pays a dividend, or being I'm going to be a long-term investor, look at something that just continually pays dividends or something better? I don't know. I'm new to this.
Okay. There's different reasons to own mutual funds or ETFs. If you're going to ask me in general, I would probably say ETFs because they're cheaper. The management costs, and that's going to be one of the talking points here, is cheaper than mutual funds. So you want to buy them because they're cheaper, especially if you're indexing, Sean. If you're buying S&P or the NASDAQ, you're just indexing, you definitely want to go the ETF route. Okay?
Okay.
If what's better, dividend paying stocks or growth stocks, you cannot really say one's better than the other. What I would suggest, Sean, is you have a group of core holdings like a Verizon we were just talking about that pay very nice dividends, very blue chip, very safe, and then you buy a group of higher growth stocks. If you have a long time horizon, 10 years plus or whatever, you want growth.
Yeah.
You want growth. So you don't want to load up just on high dividend paying stocks because they won't give. Verizon's only growing 4%, 5%, and that's what you get when you buy a big blue chip stock. Very little growth, but you get a nice dividend.
Okay, so like a small cap and a large mid cap.
Right.
Those added to it. I mean, if you're buying like ETFs, that type of thing.
Yes. Russell 2000 is a small cap index, so you want to sprinkle that in there. And then there's ETFs that just focus on dividends. And I mentioned this last week, and a number of people, I have a list of those. That if you want that list, if you want it, send me an email saying you want that dividend paying list that I mentioned on the radio, and I'll send you a copy of it. It's ETFs on dividends. Okay?
Okay. All right. I do appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate the call. The next day for individual portfolio checkups is tomorrow. I'm going to be in San Diego. I got a couple of appointments tomorrow. So it's going to be kind of tough. But you can always go to investtalk.com and check my calendar there. I'm up in the Bay Area very frequently. I'm in my office in Dana Point often. And I'm all around. So if you want to make an appointment to meet with me, we can. Any place in California. If you are outside California, we can do a Skype or telephone meeting, anything you want. You just go to investtalk.com and click on make an appointment. And if you're a podcast subscriber, remember, we still can do it. You can take advantage of the free service, of looking at your portfolio, talking to you. I'm not a pressure guy. I don't pressure people to invest with me. That's just not my style. You can do it via Skype or the phone, just as I said. Just click on make an appointment on investtalk.com.
You have to go where the bargains are, and for now, there are more in foreign and emerging markets. Join Steve and Justin June 4th for an Invest Talk webinar, Global Value Investing, Finding Opportunities in Foreign, Domestic, and Emerging Markets. Steve and Justin will share an ETF list of foreign markets also, and there'll be plenty of time for your questions too. It's June 4th, 6:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time. It's free, but you do need to register. You can do that now on investtalk.com.
Okay, it's time for InvestTalk 101. Our class is in session. We talk about ETFs, exchange-traded funds. They trade like stocks. They have symbols like stocks. You can buy and sell them. They're excellent vehicles to use for participating in equity in the stock market with diversification. They give you pretty much instant diversification. Investors can choose to buy different baskets of stocks, bonds, or commodities and ETFs. You can buy precious metals with an ETF. And if you don't want an actively managed account, I recommend investors to choose ETFs over mutual funds, just as we just talked about. Why? For one primary reason only. Cost. The average mutual fund charges, and you don't see it. This is the problem with this. They charge an average, just the average, is 1.25% a year to manage the mutual fund for you. And they deserve and should get paid. I'm not belittling or, they get that. I'm not going to begrudge them that money. But the average ETF expense is 0.43% per year. That's a big difference. Add that over several years and you can see why I prefer mutual funds over ETFs over mutual funds if you're indexing. Remember, mutual funds can be actively managed accounts, and that's the key. Someone is managing, buying and selling, and you can get the better managers and they'll outperform for you. That's the hope. And that generally is the case. Okay, so but I do like ETFs. More recently, ETF sponsors have introduced leverage ETFs, and I'm a little bit worried about those. Some offer leveraged ETFs at 3x the underlying asset, 300% leverage. I'm concerned about that because people look at it and say, oh, then I'll just buy this because I'll make 300% of my money. But then you can lose your money 300% faster too, 3x faster. And they only think of the good part. Too many people are just focusing on the upside, not enough risk management on the downside for those leverage ETFs. Plus, leverage ETFs have what we call tracking errors. They don't really leverage 200 or 300% exactly. They don't. They have tracking errors. Because they can't buy the underlying asset. The underlying asset means they're buying the index. And that's a non-leverage index. When you leverage that index, you have to do it with instruments, different kinds of financial instruments that don't track perfectly. Swaps and contracts with brokerage firms, the different ways they do it. So it is very important, just like ETFs that are fairly liquid also, allow you to trade them relatively easily. Take a look how much they trade a day. And there's a lot of ETFs out there, so you can participate in almost any part of the market you want. Keep the costs and fees to a minimum, and remember that. That's what you really want to do. Do you have questions about ETFs? Give me a call. You can do it now, or send me a note. Go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Justin or Contact Steve. We will respond. And that's InvestTalk 101. If you have questions on this topic or any other money matter, it's time to check in now at 888-99-CHART.
Another information source to help you improve your investing skills and gain you some stress-relieving perspective is our KPP Premium newsletter. It comes out each Friday,
And one of the most popular features is our Stock Watch. At least a couple of companies are introduced to you to watch in each edition. To sign up, just go to investtalk.com today.
Hi, Steve or Justin. This is Chris from Buffalo, New York. I listen on podcasts. I have a question regarding TBT, shorting 20-year treasuries. What is your opinion on this? And is there any risk to the investor besides the original amount? In other words, if I invest $2,000, the most I can possibly lose is my $2,000. Thank you, and I will look forward to hearing the results. Thank you.
And the answer to the second part is yes, you cannot ever lose more than the invested amount. This is TBT, is ProShares, exchange-traded fund seeking correspondent to twice the inverse, leveraged fund, leveraged 200%, the inverse of the performance of the Barclays 20-year U.S. Treasury Index. So, it's the inverse of that. Now, try to follow here. So, if interest rates go up, bond values tend to go down, right? If interest rates go up, bond values tend to go down. If interest rates go down, bond values tend to go up. And this is the inverse of the 20-year treasury. So what does it want to do? What do you want it to do? Do you want interest rates to rise or fall? Inverse of the 20-year treasury. So if, remember, a 20-year treasury, interest rates go up, the value goes down. If interest rates go down, the 20-year treasury will go, the value will go up. And this is twice the inverse of that. So you're betting that interest rates are going to rise? That's what it looks like to me. You want interest rates to rise, and it's leveraged. I don't really care for the leveraged funds, as I told you, and I'd rather see you, if you're going to bet on the direction of interest rates, I would do it in a non-leveraged fund. Non-leveraged fund, because it reduces the tracking error. It gets rid of the tracking error completely. So this has been rising recently because interest rates have been rising. This will go, so just make it simple. This will go up if interest rates go up, because it's tracking the inverse of the 20-year treasury. Did you follow me on that? And then it's leveraged by 200%. So I know it can be confusing. It does. I think interest rates will rise slowly over time, so this will probably work slowly over time. Okay? We're coming up on the last segment of the program, so let's try to get your question in. If we can, you can call us now at 888-99-CHART. That's 888-992-4278.
Here's another benefit when you sign up for our InvestTalk Insider program, a brief list of real estate investment trusts, REITs, that should be on investors' radar if they're looking for exposure to this dividend-focused sector. You can sign up for this free InvestTalk Insider program on investtalk.com. Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Coming up on the next Invest Talk. Insurance companies have managed to build a better mousetrap, but is this the real 401k ripoff? That's our talking point on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Why money won't make you happy? Now, a lot of people might disagree with me, but it won't. Research shows that spending on stuff won't make you happy, and it's much better to have experiences. Why? Because experiences last, and they last in your memory. And the more experience you have, the more pleasant experience you have, like going on vacation or going to the beach or any doing anything will last longer. Spending requires making more money, and that requires working very long hours usually, and your life is diminished. Your outside life is diminished because you have to put in all the hours at work. Therefore, you're not going to be happy. And if you really want to participate in charity, you'll feel much more fulfilled if, rather than just writing a check, that you actually see what your money does, where it goes, be active in whatever it is, the charity that you're in, you'll be a lot happier. It's very, very simple. I know a lot of rich people. I know a lot of middle-class people, and I know a lot of poor people. I have a lot of friends and acquaintances in all groups, and I'll tell you this. There are poor people are very, very happy and very, very unhappy. There are rich people very, very happy and very, very unhappy. There is no equating making money with happiness. Now, I will say this. If you make money, there is a worry that the worry about making money is much less. But some rich people, when they make money and get rich, they worry about it even more. It's amazing to me. But there are people who are rich and worry about the money more than they were when they weren't rich. That makes no sense to me. But I know a lot of, I got family members who are very meager in their lifestyle, and they're very happy. They're not unhappy. So it's really, if you think money is going to make you happy, you're wrong. If you're a happy person already, money will just, you'll still be a happy person when you're rich or you're poor. It's not rocket science. It really isn't. It's pretty simple. So try not to be too focused on making a ton of money at the detriment of your happiness. Invest Talk is a two-way conversation, but if you have a question between programs, you can still ask, and we'll play it on the next Invest Talk. We're here for you at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. It's Henning from Ukraine again. Thank you again for a great show. I've got a question regarding LinkedIn Corporation, ticker symbol LNKD, and I've been looking at it for a long time. Any chance you can share with me a potential entry point valuation-wise and where you think LinkedIn might be in 2 or 3 years' time? Thank you for the show. Bye-bye.
Okay, it has pretty high growth, 35-40% sales growth. Earnings is going to fall this year, but it's going to go up 75% next year to $3.34. And the problem is LinkedIn, LNKD, provides social networking platform for enabling members to share their professional identity online via LinkedIn.com. It's a business social networking area. The problem is it's a $194 stock selling with a 90 PE. So what is $3.34 worth with a 40% growth rate? Well, I can't imagine being worth more than $70, $80 a share, and it's at $194. So this is the problem. And the stock has been falling, and it's now at a new 52-week low. 52-week low? Not quite a 52-week low, but almost there. And it's going down. You need to be patient. You need to wait. I think you need to buy it at a much lower price. Whenever you get in, it's going to be a high risk, very volatile stock. The low on the PE range that it's ever been has been 81, and right now it's at 90, so that gives you where it's been. But the stock will be very overpriced with a PE of 81. It would be. Invest Talk is a two-way. Before we close for the hour, take advantage of our opportunity to see a broader range of options for your invested dollars. You often hear us talk about overpriced stocks these days. Well, that's why global investing is more attractive right now. Get a first-hand look at the possibilities. Join us on June 4th, 6:30 p.m. Pacific Time for a free live webinar. Find out more and sign up on investtalk.com. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and for Justin Klein and everyone at KPP Financial, thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461.
InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.